When it comes to women in the workplace, there's been progress, but issues remain. That's the state of play some 51 years after the creation of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Workplace harassment is still out there. So is equal pay for women as a big issue. One other concern, pregnancy discrimination. The good news, some improvements when it comes to clarifications regarding federal protections for women and men in the LGBT community. Here today to update us on the status of women at work is Andrea Barron. She's a regional attorney of the EEOC's St. Louis District. And Andrea, so nice to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I wonder if you can give us just a quick overview here, Andrea, when it comes to the status of women at work. What are the concerns? What are the bright spots? Sort of give us a general sense of where we are today.
Sure. Well, I think when we look back to where women were when the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964, clearly there's a world of difference.
Let's hope so.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Women are highly represented in the workforce, almost virtually equally with men. We have women in leadership positions all over the place. We now have a woman running for president. So yeah. There is sort of a sense that if there's a job, then a woman is just as capable of doing it as a man. I think, though, the status of women in the workplace does seem to reflect in some ways the status of women in society in general, and we still have room for improvement. When you look at corporate leadership, for example, there still is a gap, and so we still have a ways to go.
Let's go to harassment of women in the workplace, because this is an issue that the EEOC is pointing to as a very big ongoing issue here. The picture is not pretty. The EEOC just released a report in June, and one of the subheads of this report read very simply, "Workplace harassment remains a persistent problem." Tell us about that.
Yes, it's true. This task force was started by two of our commissioners. It was not an agency-wide task force. And it was interesting because the two commissioners, Commissioner Chai Feldblum is a Democrat, Commissioner Victoria Lipnick is a Republican, and they worked together to put this team to do the research and to look at this issue. And they brought together academics, researchers, social scientists to look at where are we with harassment? And they weren't only looking at sexual harassment, but obviously that's a big area that came up.
What other kinds are there?
People are harassed in the workplace based on their race, based on religion, okay, sometimes based on age. So when we receive charges of discrimination, we receive harassment charges on virtually every basis. It's interesting because sexual harassment is an area where employers have frequently tried to, they'll have a policy that says sexual harassment in the workplace is prohibited. They'll have complaint policies for sexual harassment, but they don't always make it clear that employees should also complain about or report racial harassment or religious harassment or things like that.
In fact, the report points out that workplace training has proven ineffective and probably should change.
Well, so that's a very interesting point, Steve, and it's gotten a lot of attention. After this report came out, there were headlines that said EEOC finds harassment prevention training is worthless, doesn't work. And that's really not what
report... overstating it, yeah.
It is. What it found is that there are some types of training that work better than others, and we really need to do more research to find out what kind of training is most effective. There was some finding that at times when you just have training, and if it is not supported by the leadership in the organization saying, you know, unequivocally, harassment will not be tolerated in our workplace. If it's just a little...
Watching the film strip isn't enough, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And sometimes, particularly if there have been some complaints of harassment, and then all of a sudden there's a little bit of training, then people will feel like, oh, well, they're just doing that because so-and-so complained. And it may even be less effective than no training at all in those situations.
So the culture that leadership sets up is another point that the EEOC makes in this report. That's critical here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There really has to be an emphasis from the top of the organization all the way down that harassment will not be tolerated and that the organization wants employees to report harassment, because
that's a big issue, because so many women, mostly women, but other people too, they're hesitant to file a complaint given the possible ramifications here, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. People legitimately fear retaliation in the workplace. One of the things that this report talks about is, yes, about a third of the EEOC charges that we received in fiscal year 2015 did involve harassment.
A third of the 90,000 charges, just to put a number on it. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's nationwide. But the fastest growing area of charges that we see are in the area of retaliation, where people have reported discrimination of some sort, or they've complained about it, or they've stood up for someone else who
they pay a price for it later on.
Exactly. So retaliation is a legitimate fear. And honestly, if I have a friend or family member who comes to me and says, this is happening to me at the workplace, my first comment to them is not, oh, you need to come down to the EEOC and file a charge.
What is your first comment?
I listen. I want to hear about what it is that's happening to them. Mm-hmm. And often if there's a way that they can try to work through it in their workplace, if there's someone in management that they feel like they can trust and they can go to, I think that's the best place to start.
Yeah. How can the EEOC help, again, mostly women we're talking about here, you know, not fear retaliation so much and enable them to do and to report it if that's the proper course of action here?
Well, one of the things that we do when we receive charges of discrimination is we inform the employer immediately that retaliation is unlawful and that they should not retaliate against the employee who's reporting discrimination. And in fact, we'll encourage them that they should take this as an opportunity to see maybe there's something going on in our workplace that we need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
When we do receive charges of retaliation, particularly if someone has filed a charge of discrimination with us and then they come back a second time saying, oh, after I filed that charge, I got fired or something like that, we will give particular attention to those cases and really try to make sure that employers understand that retaliation is unlawful.
We're talking about women in the workplace, issues like sexual harassment with Andrea Baer, and she's the regional attorney for the EEOC. She's based over in St. Louis. Do you have any theories, Andrea, about why this remains such a prominent concern today, sexual harassment, you know, despite all the attention that's been slathered on this issue over, you know, recent years?
That's a very good question. And one of the things that I found most useful. I mean, I'm a litigator. I'm not dealing with a lot of these issues in this report, except, you know, but on the court side of it is how I'm dealing with it. But one of the things that I found really useful from the report is the list of risk factors. Where are the employers where this is most likely to keep happening? And one of the things is a homogenous workforce. And often it means it's in a male-dominated workforce.
Only a few women in the office every day.
Right, yeah. Right. Or, you know, truck driving or mines or oil drilling or actually listening to Mr. Margulies' comments, private prisons.
Yeah.
You know, these are areas where we have seen problems with sexual harassment because there aren't as many women. Another issue can be workplaces where some employees don't seem to conform to certain workplace norms. Mm. So if women are viewed as not being feminine enough or something like that, then they can be more at risk for harassment.
Do you have any sense, Andrea, as you look over the stats over, you know, recent years, is the situation improving as a new generation of bosses and leaders come onto the scene? Are the numbers getting better over time, or is there hope out there, I guess, is what I'm wondering?
I certainly think there's hope.
Yeah.
I think the workplace is changing, and so it's hard to say if it's getting better. In your general office environment with a large employer, I think it's getting better because there are typically policies that prohibit harassment, and there are procedures in place for how employees can report harassment. And so that's certainly an improvement. But another risk factor for harassment is when you have large employees who are people who are more vulnerable in the workplace, so immigrants and particularly undocumented workers, those workplaces are still incredibly difficult. There were a couple of PBS documentaries that came out over the last few years. One was called Rape in the Fields, and the other was called Rape on the Night Shift. And both of those programs focused on a couple of EEOC cases and some other litigation involving immigrant workers, sometimes undocumented workers. And when you have women working alone out in the fields, or they are working alone cleaning large office buildings at night, yeah, they're very vulnerable to, and the fact that they feel at risk and they are less likely to report something to law enforcement, mm-hmm, or to a manager because they're afraid of being deported, they're afraid of what may happen to their children. Those women are really at risk, and I think in those workplaces, it's not getting better yet.
Are folks who are undocumented, are they covered and protected by the EEOC?
Absolutely, yes. The EEOC will receive charges of discrimination, and we will investigate them from any worker in the United States. They do not need to be documented.
I want to go back to this concern about these cases going unreported. This is right from the report. I'm going to quote here that the least common response to harassment is to take some formal action, either to report the harassment internally or file a formal legal complaint. Roughly 3 out of 4 individuals, I couldn't believe this, who experienced harassment never even talked to a supervisor, manager, or union representative about the harassing conduct. I gather that's a situation you'd like to change.
Absolutely. We want people to feel protected in reporting discrimination. And even though certainly our agency plays a role in doing that, it really has to also come from the employers themselves. If an employer wants to create an environment where harassment is not tolerated, then they need to do that themselves. And employers who don't do that do put themselves at risk for lawsuits and other legal problems from their employees and from our agency.
Andrea Barron from the EEOC is with us just for a few more minutes. If you want to join our conversation with a quick question, 816-235-2888 is the number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. I want to turn to equal pay. This is an issue that Hillary Clinton mentions often on the campaign trail, Andrea. Where do we stand right now when it comes to men and women performing similar jobs, being paid comparable wages? What numbers do you have here?
I didn't have those numbers right here on my sheet, but women are certainly still not paid equally.
It's not what it needs to be.
It is not, and particularly when you look at management-level jobs, and there have been high-profile cases, including one just out of St. Louis, Francine Katz, who was a vice president in Anheuser-Busch and was not paid similarly to her male counterparts. Her case is an example. When they go to court, they're not always successful, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't really a problem there. In some ways, our laws, it can be tough to make the facts of any given situation match the language of our laws.
You know, do women and men have to be performing identical jobs for the Equal Pay Act to apply?
No, they don't have to be exactly identical jobs.
Similar, but not necessarily identical.
Right, yeah. Right. And there are actually two statutes. The Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that prohibits discrimination based on sex, and so that can include pay. And then we also have the Equal Pay Act, and those two legal frameworks are slightly different.
What if I'm being paid less than someone of the opposite sex who's doing the same job as me at the same location? Does that mean that my employer is violating the EPA?
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Lawyers say that a lot.
Yes. That's where it can be very difficult. An employer can say we're going to pay someone more, possibly because of education or possibly because, a big thing that comes up now is everyone says, oh, well, it's about negotiation and that women aren't negotiating as hard to get the higher pay. Sometimes that can be a legitimate reason, but not always.
What can women do if they believe their employer is violating the Equal Pay Act? What's the step to take?
Well, they can try to do something within their organization, mm-hmm. you know, take it to a manager or someone to try to address it. If they don't want to do that, certainly they can file a charge of discrimination with the EEOC, and we can get the data from the employer and look at it. It's difficult because often employees are told not to ask coworkers about what they're making. So sometimes women don't know for sure. It's just a rumor, or they think that the guy sitting next to them is making more, but they don't know for sure.
Do factors like a woman missing work for extended periods, you know, two or three times, let's say, because she was on maternity leave, justify paying her less than a male doing roughly the same work, assuming they were both hired around the same time?
It typically shouldn't, because discrimination based on pregnancy is also illegal.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. Yes. So typically that should not. On the other hand, sometimes if it's a production type job or a sales job, and if the male did produce more during that period, then in some cases that could be considered a legitimate reason.
Yeah. I mentioned there was some good news when it came to the LGBT community. When these folks face discrimination at work, I was surprised to read that the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is the operative law here, does not explicitly include sexual orientation or gender identity. Does that make people who fit that description somehow vulnerable under the law?
Well, that's a great question. And the law is definitely changing in that area. When the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964, the impetus historically was, of course, race discrimination. It came out of the civil rights movement. The words "because of sex" were added sort of at the last minute, and there's some debate about whether they were actually added to try to defeat the bill because they didn't think that the country was ready to not discriminate based on sex at that time. Because of sex has been interpreted in different ways. In 1989, in Price Waterhouse, the Supreme Court said that because of sex can include sex stereotyping. So you can't discriminate a woman because she wears pants or doesn't wear makeup or doesn't have her hair long enough or something like that.
Yeah.
Over the years, then, there have been people in either because of gender identity or sexual orientation who they have challenged discrimination in the workplace using that sex stereotyping theory. It's been within the last couple of years that the EEOC has made explicit its position that because of sex does include discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Courts are not uniformly following that at this point. And so there's a debate among many people about, is the Supreme Court going to need to address this, or is Congress going to need to address this? But at least for how our agency is interpreting it, we interpret it as applying.
Well, if I leave our conversation there, Andrea Barron is with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She's the regional attorney of the EEOC's St. Louis district. I should point out that she'll be giving an update on the status of women in the workplace at 6:30 this evening at the Central Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. That's at 14 West 10th Street downtown. More information, kclibrary.org. That's 6:30 this evening at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library downtown. Andrea, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.